welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Well, in the second hour of today's show, I'm welcoming back a guest who has been on our show in the past, and we are going to have a very, very interesting discussion indeed. Let me just put this in context. I have been trying to grapple with the current brewing catastrophe in the Middle East. And you know what? I keep going from one theory to another in my head, and I cannot settle on any one fully explanatory view of what is happening. But let me just give you an example of where my thoughts run, and then we'll get some commentary on that from my very esteemed guest today. We can look at the situation in the Middle East from the perspective of the mainstream media, and we can feel like we are having a sledgehammer applied to our brain with the amount of doublethink and completely contradictory statements and actions that we see coming from every nation state that is involved in this, where you know the stated policy of countries is completely at odds with the actions of those countries. And the mainstream media view on it is enough to put you into a lunatic asylum, because it actually is literally insane. So we try to find other explanations. So we reach for an explanation that is to do with a very straightforward kind of plan for global domination. And we can say, well, actually what's really going on is that the powers that be are not really trying to resolve the situation in the Middle East. They are trying to make it worse, because they want to destroy nation states so that they can have an increasing hegemony and more influence. And that makes sense up to a point, and it certainly satisfies a lot of people's desire to understand what is going on. But then you look at the stakes involved in that, and you see the stakes are so high, the risks are so high to everyone. I mean, what they are doing is pushing us to the brink of nuclear catastrophe, because the players involved in this ultimately are countries like Russia and China, right? Because of the entire geopolitical system is interlinked. And if the hegemony that the US is trying to control encroaches too far upon Russia, such that it produces a direct confrontation with Russia, we are in the situation that we faced during the Cold War. Again, we are facing nuclear annihilation. And that just doesn't seem to fit in with any kind of objective, rational plan. Now, some people would then say, well, it's just incompetence. And that's another theory. People have the incompetence theory, and they say, well, politicians just don't know what they're doing. They make mistakes. And, you know, they're trying to fix it, but they've done the wrong thing. And we can say, well, you know, the bombing of Islamic State is actually only going to make things worse. Gee, why can't they understand that? Why do they keep making mistakes? And wow, they did the same thing in Vietnam, and look what it produced, you know. And they haven't learned from that. And we think, well, gee, America just never learns from its mistakes. And that's kind of the incompetence theory, right? And then there is one final take on this, which is actually the only one that makes any sense to me intellectually, even though it's very, very dark and disturbing, is that there is something fundamentally dark and evil going on, that there are people at the top of the power pyramid who actually want to create a global disaster, a catastrophe, something that will possibly kill billions of people. Because if you look at what they're doing, that is the end game of the maneuvering that is currently going on, however they colour it. And whether you talk about incompetence, or whether it appears to be deliberate, whether it looks like a failed gambit of America to hang on to its empire, what will happen will be a disaster that is almost unimaginable, because it's never happened on that scale before. The stakes are that high. Now, my guest today, Susan Lindauer, whistleblower, former government CIA asset, who knows an awful lot about what's going in the Middle East. And I'm hoping you today, Susan, can perhaps ease my mind and give me some clarity, at least, as to what the heck is going on. Welcome to Truth News Radio.
I don't think we can ease your mind. I think you just summed it up brilliantly.
Thank you.
I think you should do the whole show. I have to say, that was a brilliant summation of what's going on. And I think it's all three. I think that it is incompetence, I would add, from the standpoint of Washington, which favors, still has this self-prejudice of exceptionalism.
Yes.
We in America are only beginning to understand that American exceptionalism is a delusion. It's a fraud, but it's been pumped into the prop. It's been propagandized to the American people for so long that they actually that there's a deep part of us that desperately wants to believe it. And as the economy here is falling, and as the middle class is going down, I would compare it to the to something you're going to see, the British Empire. And the British elite and the collapse of the British Empire and what happened, the nostalgia for that day. And you in Australia have got to know that. You've got to recognize what I'm talking about. We're seeing the same thing play out now, that America doesn't want to let ordinary Americans are devastated to realize that Afghanistan and Iraq have cost us everything. We know that we are on one hand, we know that we are bankrupt. We know that our tax policy is going to destroy, is going to wipe out what's left of the middle class. There's no jobs for our kids. Our kids are going to university and there's nothing for them to do after they graduate. We are sliding into a second world status, if not a third world status. Mm. That's next. We are, all of our economy here, which is so bad, is firing up the spark. It's like the trigger sparking this nostalgia to grab on to what's left of American exceptionalism and to hold on to that for dear life, even though it was always a fraud. It was never true. But the old, Ronald Reagan, the glory of Ronald Reagan, telling us it's okay, we're America, we can do these bad things. That is a psychological factor in the incompetence category. I do believe what you said in I'm sorry to say, I do believe in the third sequence that you said as well, which was that you said that that the elite have got to kill off large numbers of population. We don't have as society becomes more mechanized, the industrial age becomes the computer age, becomes they have extra bodies, and the extra bodies, you only need so many serfs, you understand, to clean your house,
yes,
to be the domestic grunt, and then all these extra bodies, how are you going to feed them? How are you going to clothe them? We are running out of global resources. And if you have non-productive population, what are you going to do with them? So you have now I believe Ebola is a true virus. I do not believe that's man-made. Some people are trying to say, maybe the CIA made it up. No, that comes from the jungle. Yeah, I get that. But ISIL is an example of a CIA policy pretty much to put a wall around the Middle East and to kill each other off, to let them let the Arabs kill each other off, and to drop as many bombs and weapons and fire that up as much as possible, and then keep everyone cordoned in the kill zone, and then we'll see who comes out of it alive at the end. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
It's like a gladiator ring.
And this policy of bombing.
Do you agree? Do you disagree? Do you have any comment to that?
Okay. I've been following the narratives that have been given to us by our fearless leaders. And, of course, the narrative that they give is that this bombing is done to try and put a halt to Islamic State. And this is, to me, incredible that they expect us
is intended to put put an end to the Islamic State. But in the process, it is feeding the coffers, the profiteering of the military-industrial complex, which is the last thing America makes, is weapons. we have pretty much no other manufacturing capability in this country. And so the United States is once again finding a path to give money to the big campaign contributors in the congressional and presidential elections. They're keeping the elite afloat so that the elite are fed even if the rest of us are dying off. And they have to invent a new conflict to justify this, and they found it now. But at the same time that they're bombing, every time you drop a bomb in Syria to wipe out the oil fields, you have destroyed economic development potential in Syria. You have destroyed future income in Syria. How are these people supposed to recover? How is the Syria – let's just say that you do knock out Assad. How is Syria supposed to recover from this violence and this degradation when it's all over? Who's going to rebuild their country? You know, how is this going to happen? And so every time you destroy the economic potential, you make it more that's happening every day. You are making it more and more impossible for a recovery to occur. What's going to happen to those people then? How will all those refugees that are in Lebanon and Jordan and Turkey, how will they go back where they came from? And so you see that, you know, Syria as a microcosm of the whole Middle East, which is, I really believe the United States is building a wall, or building an economic financial wall around the Middle East with the intention of obliterating it. So I do think that. I would tend to agree almost with your third category too. This is a policy of mass destruction to wipe out undesirable elements of the earth who happen to be human beings.
Well, it's tending towards an inevitable conflagration. If that conflagration occurs, it will be catastrophic. And we know that the weapons of mass destruction exist. This is not a case like with Saddam Hussein, when they said that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and turned out he didn't. We know the Russians have weapons of mass destruction. We know that the US has weapons of mass destruction. We know that there are many other countries around the world, including Israel, that has weapons of mass destruction. And if things get tough enough, if the situation gets bad enough, someone is bound to use one of those weapons. And that is the unknown. What happens when one nuke is used? Is it going to be a chain reaction? Is it going to be the worst thing that we've ever dreamt of? And I guess that's, to me, the thing that I'm most concerned about. That's the thing that I feel we must try and understand. And I don't think there's anything we can seriously do about it, because the forces at work are so powerful, there's so much momentum behind it. But we have to try and understand it.
There is momentum, but what I said about the desperate delusion of American exceptionalism, do not discount that.
Susan, we're just going to break. Sorry to interrupt. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We will be right back after this break. Don't go away. Men and women of Earth, may I have your attention? This is Herewood Fenton, host of Truth News Radio Australia. You're invited to join the info war as we work to restore truth in media and challenge the dark forces which now dominate mainstream news. I'm calling on you, valued listener, to use your hard-earned dollars to help us smash the globalist empire. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe today. Truth News Radio Australia. My guest today is Susan Lindauer. whistleblower, former US CIA asset, someone with an expert knowledge of the Middle East, someone who has exposed a lot of the worst lies and disinformation that have come out of the US government and our policies towards the Middle East. And Australia's involvement in all that, of course, is very well known and on the record. I just want to just digress for a moment, Susan, because I just want to point out something. I grew up in an era where I was told as a child that the Vietnam War was like a lesson that America learned and that they would never repeat because they learned it and that, you know, they got their butts kicked so badly in Vietnam that they would never do the kind of stupid things that they did in Vietnam. Now, in some ways, you could say, well, they haven't committed large numbers of troops to conflicts like they did in Vietnam. So maybe they have applied some, you know, field experience from that to the current military campaigns that they're engaged in, far less commitment of human troops. But a lot of their other policies appear to be just repeating what they did in Vietnam. And just to give you an example,
when you've got a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. That really fits.
Well, yeah,
we have one tool. We have one thing left in the American economy, and that's the military-industrial complex, which is a corporatist welfare recipient. The defense complex is corporate welfare ad nauseum to the nth degree. And those are the campaign contributors in the elections, and they want payback. And they are desperate to feel that they are not going down with the rest of the United States economy. And that's a critical problem that we have right now. But did we learn from Vietnam? No. I think that we believed that we were better than Vietnam and that Vietnam was a mistake. That there were factors in it was a jungle. So we learned never to fight in a jungle. But we didn't learn never to fight.
And the propaganda machine learned a few new tricks. There's certainly slicker propaganda now than there used to be. But just to highlight the one thing that to me is just such a very powerful analogy. In 1969, under the advice of Henry Kissinger, the US launched a massive bombing campaign that went into Cambodia because they felt they had to eliminate the Viet Cong once and for all, and they began bombing another country that was not even involved in the conflict with the same sort of arguments that are being used now against the Islamic State. And, you know, that bombing campaign that went on for 5 years, not only did it not stop the Vietnam War, it didn't slow down the Viet Cong, it helped them recruit, and it also helped recruit another bunch of maniacs in Cambodia called the Khmer Rouge, who were infinitely worse than anyone could even have imagined the Viet Cong could have been. That these people were really, really nasty, and
yes,
the extremism that is created. This is the point I wanted to make: is the extremism that is created by these indiscriminate bombing campaigns has been proven in history that it happens, and so we've seen the creation of Al Qaeda in the forge of Afghanistan, and the Cold War, and the Soviets, and then the US, and we've seen the fostering of Al Qaeda through the US militarism and invasion of Iraq, bringing Al-Qaeda into Iraq where it didn't even exist before. And then onward beyond that, we've now seen the creation of something even worse, which is now being kind of it's like when you use toxic chemicals on insects or bacteria, you create a worse type of bacteria because it develops all kinds of defenses against what you're doing, and it becomes much more dangerous. And it's almost like a laboratory experiment to see, can we create the most evil, fanatical, deranged political phenomenon that the world has ever seen? Because that's the strategy that's being created, that's being followed.
Yes. I agree with you. I agree with you in total. I think it's very astute. There's some information I'd like to share with your audience that is not known, that at the time was highly classified. After 9/11, after the 9/11 attack, I was the CIA back channel to Iraq, to the Iraqi embassy at the United Nations, dealing with senior diplomats and ambassadors. From 1986 right up to the invasion. And before the war, there had been a peace option on the table that included very briefly all of the following things: weapons inspections with no conditions, an FBI task force that would be authorized to go into Iraq and investigate terrorism, conduct interview witnesses, and make arrests. After the war, after 9/11, the Iraqis added to the package. They offered the United States financial documents that would pinpoint the financial pipeline, like banking records, that would pinpoint the financial pipeline that was feeding terrorism.
Yeah.
And where terrorists were getting their money and moving their money from. That was one thing they offered. The second thing they offered, they said, sure, send in the FBI, and we have someone we want to give you. His name is Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, and he was the founder of ISIL.
Wow.
The Iraqis tried – now listen to me, people. The Iraqis tried desperately to give him to the United States.
Mm.
I know, because they tried to give him to me.
Yeah.
And they said he was a monster. He was just they said you have Guantanamo, you should put him there. Because he's so terrible. And he said this man is the worst terrorist we've ever seen. He's vicious and savage and crazy. The problem was that Iraq was under strict orders because of the United Nations sanctions, because of Saddam's reputation. It was politically impossible for Iraq to arrest terrorists political prisoners, make political arrests. They said, you know, even if we know that they're against the Saudi government, the Saudis would be outraged against us. If we, you know, there'd be a political storm. Mm. We don't dare do it. We cannot arrest these people. So, but because of internal politics inside Iraq, they also did not always have the power to deport them. So they tried to give Zarqawi to us, and we refused. We were so arrogant. The hubris was so immense that we imagined what were we thinking? I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. And all of the things that have happened in the catastrophic aftermath of the Iraqi war, I personally wrote about. I debriefed the White House, and I said, these are the things that are going to happen. My cousin was the chief of staff to George Bush. Andrew Card,
yes.
The man who, by the way, leaned into George Bush and whispered in his ear and on the morning of 9/11 when he was reading in the classroom, reading the book about the goat upside down. That was my cousin. And my cousin was received 11 debriefing papers from me about the peace option and if there was a war, what the catastrophic impacts would be. After the war, after the first year, when George Bush was running for re-election, I was subsequently arrested on the Patriot Act and held under secret charges, secret evidence. The government had no obligation to show that I ever broke the law. I was locked up on a military base, Carswell Air Force Base in Texas, to hide this information from you.
And I want to actually get more on that from you when we come back from break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm talking to Susan Lindauer. We're just going to break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm talking to my guest, Susan Lindauer. Susan, you were just before the break there describing your arrest under the Patriot Act, and I think this is something well worth going over again for our audience. A lot of people are familiar with your story, but probably many are not. You were arrested under the Patriot Act, which, similar to many laws around the world enacted after 9/11, removes the burden of proof, and people can be detained indefinitely. And this applies in Australia too. And each time there is some new terrorist threat, there are more changes, and it's ratcheted up a little more. We've had recent new changes to our laws in Australia, simply in the wake of the current crisis in the Middle East. But do continue with your story.
The irony of my situation is that I was an anti-terrorism expert,
yeah,
and that I had worked for a decade against terrorism. I had a brilliant history. I gave advance warning about the 93 World Trade Center attack, advance warning about the USS Cole, advance warning about 9/11. Though, in fact, 9/11 is kind of funny because it, of course, that my intelligence on 9/11 came from the CIA, and that cycled back through. So I learned about it from the CIA six months before the attack. Rather than, wow, you know, it wasn't my own sources. When I was asked to pump my Iraqi sources to see if they had any intelligence on this, they said that all the news, that all the information, everything was coming back to us. All things cycled back to the United,
yeah,
States.
Yeah. Now, of course, you were detained.
I want to focus on the ISIL thing, because,
sure,
We only have a short time left in the show. I think this is so important for the global audience to recognize and to stand strong on this. The United States and our allies in Saudi Arabia and Qatar financed and created ISIL. We paid for those black uniforms,
yeah,
and those black headbands. We paid for the machine gun, the AK-47s. We paid for the machine guns. We paid for the rocket launchers. We paid for all of the supplies that they're using right now. They were trained, ISIL fighters were trained by some of the best security forces in the world, the United States. They were trained in Jordan. They were trained in Turkey. Now, this is at odds with the new political propaganda, but never forget it. You must never hold on to that tight, because no matter what comes next, we created these people, and it was not a hapstance kind of thing. We are still, you know, we invited them, we recruited them, we provided them food and shelter in the training camps. All of their military training comes from us. Okay, so we have created this boogeyman.
And yet, is it not quite amazing that President Assad is still in place in Syria?
If President Assad has strong, powerful support among the Syrian people. I have a radio show myself, and I did a show with Franklin Lamb, who I recommend very highly.
Yes.
And we were in Damascus. He was in Damascus, and he was on the seventh floor of a hotel, and coming up from the garden level, we could hear singing.
Really?
And it was apparently a wedding party. And the wedding party was singing patriotic Syrian songs as loud as their voices could carry them. So we could hear it behind him at all times through this. It was a marvelous interview, because he was saying, listen to the sound behind me. That's seven stories down.
Amazing.
By the pool where this wedding is going on, and they're singing the Syrian national anthem as loudly as they can. You cannot manufacture that kind of support. That is a passion. That is a will to survive and endure. And these are not government people. They're ordinary Syrians who are just like if you were in Australia being attacked, you would suddenly probably a lot of you would discover a deep love of your country and a determination never to let some outsider come and wreck it for you.
And you
would be furious if they came and destroyed Australia. If you're, you know, I would be furious if someone came and destroyed Maryland. I would hate that person. I would never forgive somebody who bombed my schools. I would never forgive, you know, and this is what, this is, you never forgive someone who destroys your country. It's heartbreaking to watch it happen. And it makes you much more, you find your own political identity in that moment, even if you never really thought you cared before and you were just taking it for granted. Once somebody outside comes in and tries to take it away from you, you'll find you love your country deeply. I guarantee it. I would feel the same way. And so you have these fighters coming from, they're mostly from foreign countries, Libya, Tunisia, Turkey, coming in and tearing apart the country. And the Syrian people are being butchered by ISIL. And no one cared as long as it was happening to this. And this is something you should never forget either. Nobody cared so long as they were decapitating Syrian people. Nobody cared so long as they were carving up bodies and eating the lungs and kidneys, which is just disgusting, barbaric, grotesque, unforgivable. Mm. I mean, ISIL is a true force. It is not, you see, ISIL has become an authentic enemy.
Yeah.
But how is it that we are the ones who empowered them to do it? We were so blinded by our hatred of President Assad, who is a secular, tolerant, inclusive Arab leader. All of the different sects around in Syria, all of the different religious parties, and there are tens of them, scores of these people. They were all protected. All political philosophies, all religious ways of life, Christian, Muslim, Jewish, all of them were safe. But there is one thing that President Assad would never do, and this is so dishonest of the United States not to see it, that it has to be said. President Assad refused to allow Syria to be used as a base against Israel. And here is the ultimate irony, because at the end of this game, the reason that these ISIL fighters want Syria so desperately, they must win in Syria in order to execute the next stage of their plan, which is to go after Israel.
Yeah.
It is all about, it's like a real estate agent will tell you, it's location, location, location. They must have access, they must take Syria. And the end game is not the end game is Jerusalem. They want a caliphate that is going to knock out the Israeli government. And so I find myself in the ironic situation in Washington of warning them. I am not a friend of Israel. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. I'm a pretty outspoken opponent of Israel. I hate what they did in Gaza, but I really do. And this is, you know, you're going to think, oh, she's defending Israel. Mm-hmm. I'm not defending. I would never defend Israel. I'm telling you what's going to happen. This is the plan. This is stage one, and stage two is a massive united Arab front against the Israeli government, and Assad is in the way. And so every time Washington, this is what I say to my Washington friends, I say, every time you drop a bomb on Assad's forces, you are promoting a war against Israel in the future, in the very near future, in the next 3 to 5 years. It's going to happen. It will. And Washington and then we're going to have this conversation, and you're going to be saying, didn't they recognize that the war was going to turn to Israel? How could everybody have been so stupid? Well, now you're in the game too. All of your listening audience is in the game. You need to open your eyes, because this is going to be a catastrophic World War III meltdown if we don't stop it right now.
We're just going to break. You with Truth News Radio Australia. Stay with us. One more segment to go with Susan Lindau. Great to be with you today. Well, we've been chatting with Susan Lindau about the catastrophe that is brewing, the inevitable nature of it. And it seems to me that we are more or less in agreement, Susan, that that the only way out of this is going to be... I really hate to be negative. I really do. Like, I want to see a positive way out, but all I can see is a mushroom cloud.
I
can see is a mushroom cloud because you brought Israel into the equation, and I did want to ask you about Israel, but I'm glad you brought it in. Because, of course, Israel is another extremely aggressive country with a massive arsenal with an untold number of nuclear weapons, which will simply not allow them now not allow themselves to be taken over, in my opinion. I mean, I take your point that they want to form the caliphate, they want to wipe out Israel, but in order to do that, the last resort for Israel is they've got submarines with nuclear weapons that are just, you know, going around the world like the US has, that even if Israel is wiped out, they can launch a half a dozen or a dozen nuclear missiles from their submarines. I mean, and yes, they would certainly do it if it came to the point of Tel Aviv being sacked. You know, if Tel Aviv was invaded and sacked, of course they would do that as a last resort. So that's what we're faced
with. Oh, I don't think
it
would be a last resort. I think it would be early on. I don't think Israel has any restraint whatsoever. I think that it would be a first option, not a last option. But the problem is that there's a billion Arabs, and even if you knock out a couple of cities, man, you're gonna see fighters coming in from everywhere.
Yeah,
and if you threaten, oh Lord, you hit Mecca, and you have created a hatred of Israel. The hatred's already created. You've multiplied the hatred of Israel, and they're martyrs. They would see that as an act of martyrdom. The one thing about the Arabs is that you have to respect. They are not afraid of dying. So if you wipe out their cities, well, you've just created 10 million martyrs in that city, and they're just going to keep fighting you on and on and on, and. This is very important for your audience to know. The CIA has, during the Lebanese Civil War, which encompassed Israel, did a study that if all of the Arabs united together in a 10-year war against Israel, not a 10-day, 10-year war with Israel, the Arabs would win. Well, ISIL got hold of that report, and ISIL is now telling the Palestinians, and they are recruiting heavily at 60 Palestinian refugee camps, and they're saying, oh, the CIA said we could do it, and we can beat the Israelis in 10 years. We say we can do it in 6 years, and we are going to take your cause. We're going to take you out of these refugee camps. And I will tell you, in Lebanon, for example, Palestinians are not allowed to hold jobs. They are not allowed. They have some education because the United Nations requires them to have some education. But they're not allowed to have jobs.
That's shocking.
They're not allowed to own houses. They're not allowed to own property. They are denied citizenship in Lebanon. Categorically denied.
They're just refugees they're stateless people.
That's right. They're stateless people. So the Arabs use the Palestinian cause to promote their hatred of Israel. Yeah. But They also refuse to absorb them and to give them any human rights in their own country, which is very big and problematic. However, at this stage, the ISIL fighters are taking advantage of that. And it's really too late to, you know, Lebanon should be encouraged to relent on that policy and reverse that policy immediately. If you want to stop a major conflagration with Israel, the local Arabs, the Jordan and Lebanon have got to give them rights, political rights, and rights to hold a job, basic economic rights.
And if I may just interject, Susan, what about Egypt? When what is going on with Egypt? Why has Egypt sealed the border with Gaza again after all that's happened? How can they be so cruel?
Oh, it's cruelty. It's so cruel. It's so terrible. It's just this awful, awful thing. It's heartbreaking to watch this stuff. But the Arabs have an identity that revolves around its hatred of Israel.
Yeah.
And we all know this, and that's not saying anything new, but we should expect the Samson effect to go into play. If there is a war, I would regard any assassination of President Assad as equivalent to the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand that sparked World War I.
Yes, that would be that would
once
be
he's taken out.
Red flag.
God forbid.
Yeah.
God forbid President Assad is ever killed. Because if he is killed, all bets are off. We're on to a World War scenario at galloping speed.
Absolutely. Susan, just want to get one more question in. We've only got a few minutes, but I just want to get a quick take on the rhetoric that we have so much of now. We're getting it a lot in Australia, and I get a lot of it on from my own context on Facebook. You probably do as well, that attribute this violence to the religion of Islam. And it's creating this atmosphere of intolerance against the religion of Islam. What's your take on that, and what can we do about it?
Oh, boy. Yes. Yes. That's true. The problem is that there is Islamic fascism. It is very real and it's very scary.
Yeah.
And they are butchering. The Islamic fighters
are
committing
doing, yeah.
unspeakable crimes. And it should be abhorred. There's no way to excuse it. There's no way to rationalize it or justify it, what they're doing. But then you have to come back and say, okay, that's a radical extreme, just like there are radicals in Christianity. That doesn't mean that every Christian is a maniac, but it's very hard to do emotionally when you're seeing these horrific deaths. And let's be honest, there's some Australian fighters that are in there too.
Indeed.
Who, you know, the man who took his 10-year-old son to Syria and held up the decapitated bodies, decapitated heads. My God, who does that with a child? Some of these people are monsters, and you know, God help us, because we are in a. I think that General Martin Dempsey is correct that they have an end of days viewpoint. And they are going to bring – it is their intention to bring the fight to us and to force us to engage in a forcible confrontation. I want to say one last thing about nuclear war.
Yeah.
That ironically, the first nuclear attack is probably going to be in New York City. Mm-hmm. I do not think it will be the first – that Israel will be the first to drop a bomb on the Middle East. I think the first bomb will be used by the Arabs against us.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe
mm-hmm.
that. Mm-hmm. I do not see a mushroom cloud over mm-hmm. New York City. I see a dirty nuke.
Yeah.
A miniature like a suitcase bomb.
Yeah.
But it will result in widespread contamination. And I think that Al-Qaeda was really Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
and that we may, and again, we created ISIL, but ISIL is now everything that Al-Qaeda never dreamed of. Al-Qaeda, the ISIL fighters saw the vision of empowerment, and they looked around at the weak men who were never the threat that the United States fabricated in our propaganda. But the disenfranchised, young, disenchanted, unhappy young men who saw no jobs, no future, no economy, imagined that they could become the lion that was so feared by the United States. And then they would no longer be impotent and weak and fragile and vulnerable. They wouldn't be detained by U.S. forces in Iraq. The abuses of the United States have contributed a thousandfold to what you're seeing now. It was a brutal, ugly occupation, and my friend, payback's a BBB. You know,
and this
I can't
can be
say
explained.
It on the radio.
This can be
it's
explained.
Ugly. We did this.
Yeah.
They are responding to us. For every action, there is a reaction.
And these atrocities.
They have become what we. They have become the Arabs worthy of the attack.
And these atrocities can be explained by understanding human psychology, by looking at the work of like people like Philip Zimbardo and Stanley Milgram and the abuse of power. What happens to people who become dehumanized and then are given so much power? The psychology of it.
They don't have any power. They don't have any power.
But you have power over someone that you've got.
What the United States has created.
Yes.
They have seen the image of the boogeyman, and they would love to become that. That's what their dream is now, because they were so emasculated. They were raped. We raped those people. We raped the men particularly. We abused them so terribly in front of their children. We raped their spirits, their souls, and now they are rising from that dead with hatred and brutality, and it is revenge.
Yeah. And again, it is not the religion of Islam that is making them do that. It is something very basic to understand between the human heart. What happens to people who've been abused?
Yes.
Thank you so much, Susan. It's been awesome talking to you today.
Thank you very much.
And we will stay in touch, and we'll certainly have you on again sometime. Thank you very much. That's Truth News Australia signing out for this week. We'll be back next week. See you then, folks.